Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC 302, one of the better pay-per-views I've seen. In terms of the main event, we do have our thoughts on the entire card from the beginning prelims to the final event of the night, which was Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier, which did not disappoint, as I just mentioned. However, there was some interesting stuff on the card. Judges' scorecards, just boring fights. We'll talk about all that to end off this episode. As well, of course, we'll be talking about the NBA and NHLs. We do officially have our four teams, which will be competing for their respective championships, our two NBA and our two NHL teams. We'll be discussing all of that and kind of how they got there on this episode as well. And we're going to be checking out and discussing film, 10 new things in pop culture related to TV shows, movies, stuff like that. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. And of course, how else would we start any episode of the podcast but other than some new UFC fights? And in terms of any big fights that have been announced, I mean, we don't really have any. We've only had four new fights announced since we last recorded an episode, but I do find some of them fascinating as a loyal UFC fan. Of course, if we didn't already know, July 13th, the UFC is going to Denver, Colorado for a good old-fashioned fight night. I don't even remember last time they were in Denver, Colorado. It has to have been 5 years minimum. 5 years minimum since they were last in Colorado, at least. And we do have a fight that could be on the main card, could be on the prelims, is a welterweight matchup between Santiago Ponzinibbio and Muslim Salikov. Santiago Ponzinibbio, former top 15 fighter in the UFC, is 29-7, 11-6. In the UFC, holds wins over Sean Strickland, Alex Morono, Neil Magny. You know, he has gotten some pretty good wins. And I mean, he's actually won titles in different fighting, what do you call it, leagues other than the UFC. He's had two fight of the nights, three performance of the nights. This is a fun fighter. Now he's getting up there in age. Okay, he is 38 years old, so he's probably nearing the end of his tenure in the UFC, but it's fun to kind of see him in a matchup here, and he's looking to get back in the win category as he takes on Muslim King of Kung Fu Salikov, 19-5 professionally, 6-4 in the UFC, holds wins over Andre Fiallo, Eliseo Zaleski Dos Santos, and Francisco Trinaldo. Two performance of the nights in his UFC fights. He is fresh off of getting knocked out by Randy Brown, so I don't necessarily know if he's going to be able to swing and bang with Santiago Ponzinibbio. So hopefully Santiago can get back in the win column because I do like him. He's from Argentina. Best of luck to both men. That fight goes down July 13th in Denver, Colorado. A fight going down in Abu Dhabi on August 3rd on the prelims most likely is a lightweight matchup between Abdul Karim, Pride of Palestine, Al-Salwadi. Wow. 15-4 professionally. Lost his UFC debut earlier this year. Doesn't really hold any wins over anyone. He's won titles in Brave CF, Fury FC, and Desert Force 3 regional, kind of lower level MMA promotions. But 15-4, he's getting a hometown matchup in Abu Dhabi. Best of luck to him. And his opponent, probably your favorite fighter, Guram Kudaladze, 12-4 professionally. He is 1-2 in the UFC. Actually, in his debut, he beat Matus Gamrot, to let you know how good he is. His last two fights have just been very unfortunate. He lost a close fight to Demiris Magulov about 2 years ago, and a year ago, he got knocked out by Elvis Brenner, unfortunately, in the third round. I'm happy to see Guram getting back to it. I love this guy. Trains at All-Stars Training Center. I mean, I'm hoping he can get done. He is from Georgia, same nation as Merab Dvevashvili, and Giga Chikadze. So we'll be rooting for Guram. Hopefully he can get back in the win category. If not, I'm probably going to cry. I'll let you know that. Fight announced for UFC Vegas 93 going down June 15th. Ikram Alkhasarov was, of course, supposed to take on Andre Munez. Andre Munez pulled out of the fight, but don't have any fear because Ikram Alkhasarov, who's 15-1, by the way, that one loss is to Khamzat Chimaev. He was 2-0 in the UFC with wins over Dennis Tallulah and Walray Alvarez. Both of those round one knockouts. Actually, Phil Haas. Phil Haas was his other UFC opponent. He must have beat Dennis Tallulah on Dana White's Contender Series or the regional scene. I don't even know, but stepping in his UFC debut to take the place of Andre Munez is Antonio Malvado Trocoli. Antonio Trocoli, he is from Brazil. Doesn't really hold any notable wins. He is 12-3 with one draw professionally. So, I mean, pretty good. He fought in Jungle Fight, which I believe is the Brazilian promotion. in terms of like their own MMA promotion. But I mean, hey, I'm happy to see Ikram getting a fight, and I can pretty much bet your buck that Ikram's getting another round one knockout. Love him, love him, love him. And the last fight that has recently been announced, actually announced today, June 3rd, Andre Petrovsky will be taking on Josh Fremd in the men's middleweight division, of course going down on that Denver, Colorado card July 13th. Andre Petrovsky, who is 10-3, 5-2 in the UFC, he has shockingly been KO'd. His last two fights was starched by Michelle Pereira, then he was knocked out by Jacob Malkoon in very weird fashion, and he like got knocked up by his hip. I don't even know what happened, but Andre Petrovsky, he's a finisher. He's beaten Wellington Turman, Nick Maximoff, Gerald Meerschaert, three pretty legit guys. As for his opponent, Josh Fremd, he's 2-3 on a little win streak now. Picked up wins over Jamie Pickett, and Cedric Dumas. So, I mean, winner might stay, loser might go out of the UFC. I think this is a good fight for Andre Petrovsky. Get a pick-me-up win here. Get it done. That's what I'm rooting for. Okay, that's what I'm rooting for. But other than that, no other new fights. We have a lot of UFC 302 talk to go over. I think that's gonna be the bulk of what we'll be talking about on today's episode. So we'll leave those fights to where they're at. But as for new fights being announced, we'll get back to that on the next episode of the podcast whenever that drops. I'm probably gonna record it June 5th because I am going out of town June 7th, 8th, and 9th for to see my buddy Jaden, who is in Chicago. So stay tuned for that. And unfortunately, something I have had to stay tuned into has been the NBA playoffs, guys. Okay, and I know if you follow the NBA, you should know by now the Timberwolves are out. When we last met, when I last uploaded an episode, they were playing to stay alive in game number 5. And they lost. They lost. The Mavericks blew them out 124 to 103. And at one point, I think almost were up by 40 points. It was absolutely ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, Timberwolves, good season, made it to the Western Conference Finals. And yes, the Dallas Mavericks will be taking on the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals. That game 5, I mean, it just went from bad to worse. I mean, first quarter, 35-19, we're losing. Luka Doncic had 20 points. He outscored the entire team. I mean, come on, you're absolutely kidding me. Luka Doncic, 36 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists to send the Timberwolves back, and he's good. He's freaking good, I'll tell you guys that. Kyrie Irving, 36 points, he was contributing. PJ Washington, 12. Daniel Gafford, 11. Derek Lively had 9 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, everyone was contributing. Jaden Hardy off the bench, 7. It was a team effort. It paid off. It paid off tenfold. Holy cow, this Mavericks team just put it all together. Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards both dropped 28 points respectively. The only people in double digits, Jaden McDaniels, 8 points. Rudy Gobert, 9 points. Mike Conley, 7. Kyle Anderson, 7. It's like they didn't even want to be there. My Minnesota Timberwolves just losing it all. Not even going to make it. Mavericks shot 54% to the Timberwolves, 42%. Other than that, they out-rebounded us. They had a lot more defensive rebounds, let me tell you that. Honestly, pretty similar everywhere except for the score. They made a lot more field goals than us, and that was the deciding factor. They made 5 more threes, so that's 15 points. Yes, 15 points right there. Dang it. There's nothing to even say, guys. Yeah, Mavericks Celtics game 1 on June 6th. Don't really know if there's a preview for that. 7:30 on June 6th. Well, actually, I don't even know when's they do 2 days in between. They get Friday and Saturday off. They do 2 days in between. I think the NHL just goes every other day, so they're more hardcore. But yeah, this should be an interesting matchup. I don't know if they really have a matchup shower here. Let's look at the odds. Let's look at the odds for game number 1 between these two teams. All the money's on Dallas. I've been seeing all the money's on Dallas. They are +180. For DraftKings, they're actually this is single game props. Where's the team props? I don't need to see about anything about that. Why am I seeing Kristaps Porzingis odds? Here we go, guys. All right, FanDuel, they have Dallas at -112. Boston at -108. Okay. Oh, this is for the spread. Guys, I cannot find. I got Moneyline. Here we go. I finally found it. Moneyline. All right. On FanDuel, Dallas is +210. +210 is pretty consistent. DraftKings has them at +190. BetGM at +200. Boston's minus 255 on one site, minus 263. The lowest they are is minus 230 on DraftKings. So DraftKings probably is the best place if you want to bet a Celtics pick. But as for, I mean, Caesars Sportsbook, FanDuel, that's where you're going to get your plus 210 on the Dallas Mavericks. The spread's plus 6 for Dallas, minus 6 for Celtics. Over-under is 214.5 points. The Celtics have opened as 6-point favorites a few hours after the Mavericks knocked off the Timberwolves, a number that climbed to minus 6.5 and stayed there until it dropped down to minus 6. This is the shortest spread Boston has faced this postseason. Wow, very interesting. And then the total opened at 214.5. It's gone between 214 and 215 multiple times. But yeah, game one at the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts will be on ABC, so anyone can watch. As far as injuries goes, Kristaps Porzingis will be out. He was out Monday. He was out the last time the Celtics played, but he should be back for game one. Same for Luke Kornet. As for the Mavericks, they look to be completely healthy. So it should be a showdown. My prediction right now, of course, we'll be dropping predictions between every single game. But I'm definitely, oh man, I honestly favor the Celtics. I think this is the Celtics year, you know. And I was going to root for the Mavericks if they made it. But now I don't like the Mavericks because they beat the Timberwolves. And honestly, Jason Tatum, he is so hyped up. And everyone's kind of hating on him. So I kind of hope the Celtics get it done. But honestly, if the Mavericks win, I won't be too mad because they deserve it. Luka Doncic is absolutely star-studded. As much as you hate him, he's so talented, and it'd be kind of cool to see that young gun team of the Mavericks get a ring. So it'll be interesting. I'll probably check out some games here and there, but I'm not gonna be too invested since the Timberwolves are not in it, which makes me sad. It really breaks my heart. I'll tell you something that is very unfortunate, though, is that the city of Dallas had a chance to have two of their teams go to their championship games. As the Mavericks made it, the Dallas Stars failed too, as the Edmonton Oilers have advanced to the Stanley Cup Finals 4-2 in a Game 6 win over the Stars. And also, the Florida Panthers return to the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Stanley Cup championship, I should say. They beat the Rangers 4-2. So yeah, by the way, I had Rangers and Stars in a lot of my brackets. I think I made two, so I shouldn't say a lot. So I mean, Panthers, Oilers, Stanley Cup final. Who'd have thought that was going to go down? But I mean, great work from both these teams. Both their series were tied at 2-2. Panthers and Oilers both went on the road. Then both seal them out at home. Impressive stuff. Let's check in with that Game 6 win for the Oilers. And who better to score than Connor McDavid? He had two shots on goal. Got a goal. And by the way, also had a little assist action while he was at it. Got it to Zach Hyman. He was able to get three shots that game. Stuart Skinner, 34 shots on goal is what he faced. He saved 33 of them, a .971 save percentage. Very impressive. As for the Stars, Mason Marchment, the only man to score, as Jake Odenter lets in two goals on only 10 shots. That's right, the Oilers only shot the puck 10 times and made two goals. Do you know how impressive that is? That is actually insane. That's actually ridiculous, the more you think about it. I mean, they had triple the shots, the Stars did, and they still were only able to get one less goal than the Oilers. Incredible stuff for them. Congratulations. I'll be rooting for the Oilers over the Panthers, let me tell you that, because the Panthers knocked off my main pick. I'm pretty sure I picked the Rangers in my official bracket. Same scenario in game number 6, 2-1. Panthers win it. As for Rangers, Artemi Panarin, four shots on goal. He's able to get one of those in for the only goal. As for Igor Shesterkin, 34 shots he faced. He let in two of them. One of those was the deciding factor, which it was actually scored in the third period to make it even worse. Sam Bennett on four shots on goal was able to get in one of the game winners. And Vladimir Tarasenko, love that guy. He had three shots and he was able to sink one in. So exciting stuff. Florida and Edmonton, I mean, come on. Edmonton just screams hockey town. I mean, why is Florida? Why is Florida in this? Let's see. For the NBA and NHL, we have a Texas team. We have a Massachusetts team. We have a Canadian team. We have a Florida team. So pretty spaced out when it comes to all of those. Game one going down this Saturday. I'll definitely be watching that with my buddy Jaden. 7 o'clock. Nice. Schedule stats and more from ESPN. Let's check this out. I wonder if they can give us the odds, because I don't know. I feel like the Panthers have to be favored. They were here last year. You know, I don't know if the Oilers have ever won a cup. I can't be certain if that is true or not. Don't quote me on that. But heck, they lost last year. They're back here. Very impressive. Panthers beat the Lightning in round one, 4-1. Bruins in round two, 4-2. Seal off the Rangers, 4-2. As for the Edmonton Oilers, they defeated the Kings round one, 4-1. Took the Canucks to a 7-game series. And of course, closed out the Stars. And the goalies seem to be confident. Everyone's looking pretty excited. Evander Kane needs to step up. Let me tell you that. I got that from ESPN. Okay, that wasn't me naturally saying that. But can I get odds for this? I swear, guys. You know, I have terrible Wi-Fi at my house. I'm sure a lot of you know if you listen to this podcast. My episodes are a lot easier to record when I am at my apartment in Mankato, so it's kind of hard to get stuff on the computer. So as we try and get the odds, I'm going to predict the Panthers are the favorite. That would just logically make sense for the Panthers to be the favorite. And honestly, in the recent years, the Panthers have kind of become the better team out of the Eastern Conference, if I'm not mistaken. And I know the Oilers, they've been good for a while. Wasn't what's-his-face on the Oilers? Oh my gosh, what's his name? Was Wayne Gretzky an Oiler? I do not know if that's true. I feel like I'm just saying random stats now. So, all right, we're not even going to get the over-under for this game, and I don't even care. You know what? I'm not a hockey expert, okay? I'm not an expert in the hockey realm, so we'll leave hockey to my people, my friends that actually know it. Who knows? Maybe we'll do a surprise episode with Jaden. I'm not going to make any promises, but my prediction now, I'm rooting for the Oilers. I'm rooting for the Oilers to get it done. I predict they'll win. I'm riding with the Oilers. Faux show. Speaking of the Oilers and Oilers milking money, I don't know, TV shows, movies milking money, it didn't really work, but we always try and do a little segment here on the show, and of course we have our segment of Discussing Film, where we discuss 10 new things in the pop culture segment. We go on the Discussing Film Twitter, we go through, I point out 10 things, and then we're good. That's how we do it. It's been a new thing, it's catching on, let's check it out. Eric Kripke, the director of The Boys, teases that The Boys will likely go beyond the initial 5-season plan. He said, "No one was more wrong in all of human history about how many seasons their show was going to do than this guy," pointing to himself. Of course, season 4 of The Boys, very anticipated, drops June 13th, and I am more than excited for it. See Billy Butcher, see Homelander, see The Deep, see Huey, see The Gang, this little Starlight action. So excited to see season 4 when it comes out. And yeah, they had a 5-season plan, and they said they're going to go beyond it, and this could be just a series that never ends. I mean, it is so funny. It is so gory. It is so good. The plot line is amazing. I'm excited to see where they take it. And they recently got Jeffrey Dean Morgan, of course. What's his face from The Walking Dead? The bad guy. Negan from The Walking Dead on. I'm excited to see him this season. Should be a banger. And by the way, going past season 5, I mean season 4 isn't even out. Relax is all I'm going to say. Godzilla Minus One recently came out on Netflix and is already the number one movie in the U.S. I've heard Godzilla Minus One is one of the better written Godzilla films. I know a lot of the new ones, they're very big on, you know, big monsters fighting. This one was more centered on humanity stories, very in Japan, a lot of, like, emotion with it. And it's definitely a movie I want to check out. You know, when the girlfriend's like, "Oh, what should we watch on Netflix at her house?" I'm going to be like, "Oh, how about Godzilla Minus One? How about that?" Because it looks freaking good. And it won awards, all right? No other Godzilla film is out here winning awards, so there's that. Number 3 for the evening. First look at the Sausage Party sequel has recently came out, releasing July 11th on Amazon Prime Video. Yeah, why did we make another one of these Sausage Party movies? That first movie still haunts me. Of course, the giant food orgy at the end of the movie, animated. I mean, what about their parents when their kids are like, "I'm going to turn on Sausage Party"? They briefly look at the title. Okay, it's about food. And then you get Seth Rogen cursing as a hot dog about 10 minutes in. Absolutely ridiculous. So sexual. So just weird. There was no need for this. I don't even know how this got greenlit. How did this movie get greenlit? Number four, the first trailer for Venom, The Last Dance, has been released in theaters on October 25th. I did watch the trailer today, and it looks to be probably just about what you could expect out of a third Venom movie. The first one was pretty good. Second one was definitely a step down from the first. Third one has little to live up to. The Sony Spider-Man universe is an absolutely tarnished right now. I don't even know what they're doing. But I do love Tom Hardy. I love him as Brock. Whatever, with the Venom symbiote. And by the way, there's going to be a Venom horse in the film. It looks like there's going to be more symbiotes crashing to Earth. I don't know what's going down, but it's titled The Last Dance. So I think you might see Venom die. You might see, is it Brock Hardy? Or is it something Brock? Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I can't remember the main character's name. But Tom Hardy's character, he might be passed away. We'll have to see. I don't know if I'm going to see it in theaters. It definitely strikes me as one of those movies where I have nothing to watch in my room at night. I'm going to turn this on and fall asleep. That's the kind of movie it strikes me as. Number five, the modern Planet of the Apes franchise has officially passed $2 billion worldwide thanks to the newest movie, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. By the way, $2 billion worldwide in four movies is seemingly unheard of. This franchise is so underrated. You know me, I'm a big King of the Planet of the Apes fan. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I mean, just Planet of the Apes in general. I love all of those films. I'm so excited. So excited. $2 billion is crazy. That means we're going to be getting more and more and more and more until we're just back around where the first movies began in the 60s. I love it. I'm here for it. And just thank you, Caesar, for being the best character, written character of a monkey ever. I don't even know what to call it, but I mean, these movies are great. They should win more awards. Number six, Josh Brolin has officially been cast in Knives Out 3, titled Wake Up Dead Man. I wanted to watch the original Knives Out, but apparently it's not on Netflix anymore. It was bought out or something. So I started watching the sequel, Glass Onion, and it is so good. I forgot how good those movies are, and the director's just absolutely amazing, and I love seeing Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin's one of my favorite actors. No Country for Old Men. He was in the new Dune Part 2, actually Dune Part 1 as well. Of course, Thanos from the MCU. I mean, Josh Brolin's done it all. He's been in so many roles. And he's going to be good in this film, Knives Out 3. The cast for all these movies are always so stacked. I love it. I can't wait to watch it. But it doesn't come out till 2025. I mean, they haven't even started filming yet. That makes me sad. That really does make me sad. Okay. Number six, Robert Downey Jr. reveals he is surprisingly open-minded to the idea of returning as Iron Man. He said, "It's just crazily in my DNA. Probably the most like-me character I've ever played, even though he's way cooler than I am." I worried this would happen, and I think it is happening, guys, where you're kind of seeing an actor start to, accept the personality of a character they've portrayed a lot. It's happened with, what's his face? Austin Butler with Elvis. You know, it's happened with some others where they just play this character so good that no one else can really imagine them in a different role. And I don't even know how Iron Man could come back, maybe in a multiverse movie, but the MCU is an absolute shambles. Robert Downey Jr. might be the only man that could save this franchise, because it is, MCU is not looking hot right now. Number seven, the new The Office series is reportedly titled The Paper. The series follows the Dunder Mifflin documentary crew as they focus on a dying historic Midwestern newspaper and its volunteer reporters. Okay, and I want everyone to know, when they go into watching The Paper, this new Office series, don't expect it to be like The Office, okay? You have to understand, The Office is on the top five TV shows of all time. In fact, if we're looking at, I mean, I'm not putting on like a Sopranos, Game of Thrones level, but maybe I am. It is so good. You cannot expect a little offshoot of it to be as good, okay? I think that's one big error that a lot of people are going to commit with this movie. So just leave it to its own self. Let it be its own thing. Respect it for how good it could potentially be. And, you know, I'm here for it. I'll probably watch it. I'm definitely going to have to maybe get Peacock. I assume that's what it'll be on. But hey, I'm here for it. I love The Office. I really got to rewatch it all at once, because I've never watched it like all nine seasons. Like, what is it? Synchronous? I think that's what it is. Number eight, a collab with The Boys is rumored to be coming to Fortnite. I can't believe I just read that. That's right. They're actually going to have little kids watching The Boys. They're like, oh, what's this Homelander character on Fortnite? Let me go check it out. And he's blasting an innocent man's head off. That's right. Fortnite, haven't played then, probably a year. Probably for the best. It is been a while. I just don't have an interest in anymore. You know, I've kind of lost my interest in Fortnite. It's just, it's a completely different game when I was younger. And it's funny to say, oh, when you were younger, Zach, what do you mean? It has been, gosh, I think it's been 7 years since Fortnite came out, and I played it when it came out. So, pretty wild stuff. Number nine, Furiosa has earned $10.7 million in the film's second domestic weekend this past first opening of June. The film has currently earned around $90 million after 4 weeks or 2 weeks worldwide on a $160 million budget. So it's still minus $70 million. Hoofda. Movies don't necessarily get better as they go along. Furiosa, I don't really want to hate on it, but it's a prequel. It's a prequel, and prequels are really hard to do. Okay, it's really hard to do. I don't necessarily know that this is going to be, you know, the best. I have no idea what to say. I'm probably not going to watch it. I don't even remember watching the past ones, but you know, Chris Hemsworth in it. I like Chris Hemsworth. We'll have to see. And the final thing for discussing film on this episode, a sky-high sequel would bring the entire cast back and have them all as university teachers at a place called Save U. Well, guess what? Man, oh man, I would so watch Sky High, a superhero movie starring, oh my gosh, who's the actor? Who's the actor? Oh my gosh, was it Kurt? It's Kurt something. Oh my gosh, he was in the new... He was in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He's been in everything. What's this guy's name? Is it Kurt Russell? Is Kurt Russell his name? I cannot remember if Kurt Russell is the actor's name. I think it is. He was in this film. It is Kurt Russell. He was in Sky High. I remember watching this movie all the time in school. It was basically a superhero movie up in the clouds with superheroes in high school. It was wholesome. It was for kids. And I loved it. It was good, such a good movie, so funny, good times. I hope they make a sequel. I'd watch a sequel. I mean, it takes me back to my childhood, for goodness sakes. Sky High 2 at Save U? I don't know. The plot kind of sounds a bit goofy, but I'm able to look past it to kind of reminisce on my childhood in terms of Sky High. I mean, I always wanted to be a superhero when I was little, and I'd watch that and be like, okay, why don't I have superpowers? Okay, why couldn't my dad be a superhero? Just kidding. He is. So that's gonna do it for discussing film for this episode. And maybe like, Zach, we're kind of going through this kind of fast, you know, why is it going so quick? Well, it's because I'm jonesing to talk about UFC 302. We have 12 fights to go over, talk about what's next for some of the fighters. It was absolutely electric. Trust me, I have my thoughts on all these fights. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. One of the bigger themes of the evening was without a doubt the terrible scorecards that took place, and it started right from the get-go with our first fight of the night as Andre Lima took on Mitch Raposo in the men's flyweight division. And I could have told you from the beginning that Mitch Raposo was going to lose this, okay? So the whole fight, Andre Lima outstruck him every single round, totals at the end, 51 significant strikes to 32. Mitch landed one takedown in the second, and Andre scrambled back to his feet within 9 seconds, so it was pretty comical. But yeah, Mitch Raposo had nothing for Andre Lima. Andre Lima wins, improves the 9-0. But one of the judges, in particular, all night it was Dave Tirelli, he scored the fight 2-1 for Mitch Raposo. And the only, round one was clearly Andre Lima. Round three was clearly Andre Lima. Like, the only reason he could give him round two was because Mitch landed a quick takedown, even though Andre got right back up and still outstruck him. It made absolutely no sense. It was absolutely ridiculous. And David Tyrell's an absolute joke to the sport of mixed martial arts. Mitch Raposo now is 9-2. Both his losses have come under UFC banners. But yeah, Andre Lima continuing to improve. I mean, talk about a good rebound after getting bit earlier this year. So good win for Andre Lima. We correctly predicted it. And good stuff. Actually, on the whole card, we went 137. I'm sorry, that is absolutely correct. We went 8-4 on the whole card for our prediction, so now we're 137-83 on the year. So not too shabby, not too shabby. But yeah, we thought Lima would get done by decision, and he did. Following that, Aileen Perez took on Jocelyn Edwards, and we called this one too. Let me just tell you, Aileen Perez gets the unanimous decision victory, improving to, what is Aileen Perez now? She is now 10-2 on a 3-fight win streak. Well, that ain't too bad, Aileen Perez. That's not too bad. I mean, she had it going. She outstruck her significantly 42-27, even had a knockdown in the second round. That's very rare. 6-11 on takedowns. 4 reversals, though, for Jocelyn Edwards. 2 reversals for Aileen Perez. Jocelyn threw up a submission attempt in the second. Control time, 4 minutes 18 seconds for Aileen Perez, 5 minutes 11 seconds for Jocelyn Edwards. I mean, it was pretty much round one, Aileen. Round two could have gone either way. Round three could have gone either way, but then today Aileen Perez got the victory. And then she went very ambitious and called out Kayla Harrison for nobody who knows. Kayla Harrison's the number 4 women's bantamweight in the world, and Aileen Perez isn't even ranked. I would rank Aileen Perez now. Now she picked up a win. Let's look small. How about Yana Santos, Aileen Perez? That's the number 12 ranked Yana Santos. That should be a good spot. As for Jocelyn Edwards, 2 fights now. She's lost. She's now sitting at 4-4 in the UFC. It's probably one more fight for her to stay alive. And all those fights have been decisions, so very, very boring, too. Yikes. After that, we had yet another decision as Basil Hafez took on Mickey Gall and got the victory. Unanimous decision as well. I mean, pretty much all rounds except for... I mean, I don't even know. All the judges except for one had all rounds going to Basil Hafez. He outstrikes him 95-83 significantly. Total strikes 101-93. 3-5 on takedowns. Mickey Gall went 1-2 on takedowns. But yeah, this fight was fought on the feet. Very competitive. Basil outstruck him in every round. Round three was much more, was probably the best round for Mickey Gall. But yeah, Basil Hafez was in his bag, improving to 9-3 now. Very impressive. Getting it done. I thought he'd get a knockout. He almost had it. He was throwing some big strikes in round two, but no dice. No dice. And after losing last July in a fight of the night against Jack Del Maddalena, this is a great rebound. Great rebound. Showed his striking. Impressive stuff. As for Mickey Gall, he's now 7-6, 3-fight losing streak, 1-4 in his last 5. Yeah, it's probably looking like the end of the road for Mickey Gall. It was a fun run, though. Fun 10 years in the sport, but you're done. You're done, buddy. Okay. Best of luck to you, Basil Hafez. Great win in the men's welterweight division. Next up, we stayed in the welterweight division as Jake Matthews took on Phil Rowe. And honestly, he surprised me. Jake Matthews is always out here surprising me. I thought Phil Rowe would get this one done. No, he did not. No, he did not. Totals from the fight, Jake Matthews outstrikes him significantly, 66-34. Total strikes 89-40 in favor of Jake Matthews. And he landed one takedown that he attempted in the final round to get 3 minutes of control time. Phil just got outstruck every single round. Round three, got completely outgrappled. I mean, just... I don't know what you want. I don't know what you want. Phil Rowe did not show up ready. Jake Matthews did, and that's great for him. Great for Jake Matthews, man. 29 years old, picking up his 20th career victory. And by the way, he's been fighting in the UFC since he was 20 years old. I was about to say 10. My years are completely messed up. So 9 years strong in the UFC. I actually think on June 28th, it becomes 10 official years. So great work from Jake Matthews. You know, he's pretty much gone win-loss since March of 2021, but now he's in the win column. Excellent stuff. As for Phil Rowe, you know, 2 fights now, lost in a row, both decisions. I mean, not the best, but let's just look right below. Okay, Basil Hafez and Jake Matthews, there's a good matchup. Phil Rowe, Mickey Gall, there's one more matchup for Mickey Gall. It writes itself. After that, we head to the men's lightweight division, and we knew that Grant Dawson would get this one done, but little did we know, this would be the most boring fight of the evening. This was, I will say, more boring than the co-main event by far. I mean, Grant Dawson outstruck him 46-12 significantly. Toll strikes 146-27. Holy cow. I did not even see the toll strikes. I mean, he was just giving them little headshots here and there to the body. 3-3 on takedowns for Grant Dawson. 1 takedown every round. 13 minutes and 46 seconds of control time. Are you kidding me? A fight's 15 minutes, guys. That means for 1 minute and 14 seconds, this fight was not in Grant Dawson's control. Unreal. Round 1, 4 minutes 42 seconds. That means 18 seconds in round 1 was not in Grant Dawson's control. Round 2, 4 minutes 31 seconds. That means only 29 seconds was not in Grant Dawson's control. Let's go to round 3, 4 minutes 33 seconds. Only 27 seconds was not in his control. Grant Dawson proved his grappling was levels above Joke Selecki. This was a great rebound after losing to Bobby Green. And hey, you know what? He'll definitely work his way back towards the rankings. I can promise you that. And I think maybe a fight with Rafael Dos Anjos, if Rafael stays at lightweight, could be a good option. Or even someone like Thiago Moises, that could be a fun option for Grant Dawson. As for Joe Selecki, Now lost two fights in a row now. He's sitting at 2-3 in his last five. I don't really know what's next for Joe. He hasn't really done much. He's a grappler, and he's got out-grappled. That doesn't really say good things. But Grant Dawson, getting back in the win column. Impressive record. We'll see you next time. And following that, we have the fight which should have been on the main card. I have no idea why we moved this fight off the main card. But Halton Almeida runs through Alexander Romanov like I'm pretty sure everyone expected. I mean, we said that he would get a round one submission. And what do you think happened? A round one submission for Halton Almeida. I know ball. Okay, I know ball. Let me just tell you. I knew this would happen. I called it. It did. Fight lasted 2 minutes 27 seconds. I mean, Romanov lasted the first 20 seconds on the feet. After that, you know, he was able to stop one attack from Halton Almeida just about like 8 seconds in. And then after that, got taken down, gave up his back, and got submitted. He did survive. He did survive a submission attempt, but no dice. Get submitted again. How about that? Halton Almeida, 21-3 now. That was his 13th submission and his 20th career finish out of 21 wins. He's finished 20 fights. That's unheard of. That's unheard of. Impressive stuff. As for Alexander Romanov, oh man, where do I begin with this guy? Where do I begin with Alexander Romanov? He is now 1-3 in his last four fights. He's been finished in round one in two of those fights. Not looking good. Let's give him a lesser-ranked opponent. Alexander Romanov was ranked 13th. He got Marco Sergio de Lima at 14, Rodrigo Nascimento at 15, a plethora of unranked competitors, Carl Williams, Mohamed Usman, a lot of guys who are itching to fight a ranked opponent. How about we give Alexander Romanov someone other than a top 15 guy? Because Halton Almeida was ranked number 7. You know, I think we move him past Stipe at 6. Stipe hasn't fought since 2021, so Halton up to 6. I'm not putting him past Volkov, since Volkov is fighting Sergey Pavlovich on June 22nd. But this was a great win for Halton Almeida. I think Shogun in Paris makes a bunch of sense, but Shogun probably won't accept that, since he will get taken down and submitted in his hometown of France. So other than that, maybe a fight with Volkov, win or lose, against Pavlovich. Or maybe even a fight against Sergey Pavlovich. I mean, it's a top six guy. I mean, Halton Almeida has to fight up. He will destroy anyone below him. So excellent win for Halton Almeida. This should have been on the main card. No idea why we swapped it. But yeah, great win. After that, we got to our final prelim of the night. And I'd like to say it didn't disappoint, but it did. It did. This was not the fight we expected, as Roman Kopylov beats Cesar Almeida. And we got another terrible, utterly terrible scorecard. I mean, I was so perplexed. David Tyrelli wasn't even a part of this one. It was actually, who was it? Chris Lee. Chris Lee scored the fight for Cesar Almeida. Cesar Almeida did outstrike Roman Kopylov, 58-41 significant strikes, 116-74 in total strikes. But Roman Kopylov landed a knockdown in round one, landed 5 of 9 takedowns, got 8 minutes, 39 seconds of control time. I don't care if you're looking at the totals after the fight, okay? Roman Kopylov did enough watching it live. It was a 29-28 probably. It was a 29-28. Round one, Cesar did better, but Roman landed 2 takedowns and a knockdown. That'll give him the round. Round two, he did land 1 takedown for 3 minutes of control time, even though he did get outstruck 20-9 significantly. Then round three, Roman landed 2 of 3 takedowns for 3 minutes, 40 seconds. Cesar had one more significant strike, 15-14. But yeah, Roman Kopylov played it safe, got the win. He's back in the win category. And Cesar Almeida, by the way, has, like, no takedown defense. Like, it was brutal. Like, Roman was just taking him down at ease. But good win for Roman Kopylov. He improves to 13-3. He's now 5-1 in his last 6. Very good. As for Cesar Almeida, 36 years old, just lost your first professional bout. You have no grappling. You've been taken down minimum of 3 times in your 3 MMA fights in the UFC. Yeah, that's probably it. As for Roman Kopylov, he's fun. He's feisty. I think him versus anyone at middleweight, I'll take it. I'll take him at with anyone at middleweight. I don't know if he's rankings ready. He just lost to Anthony Hernandez, but I mean, who knows? Chris Curtis is always an option. Chris Curtis can fight anyone. He's someone fun. I always like to say, oh yeah, he can fight Chris Curtis, because it's definitely something that, you know, Chris Curtis is always game for a fight. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we got into the main card, and I was feeling hot. I was feeling hot, guys. Okay, I had only predicted one prelim incorrectly. That was the Jake Matthews fight. And we kicked it off, and Randy Brown kept me a-rolling. Randy Brown keeping me a-rolling as he gets a win over Lizzy Ozaleski Dos Santos. Good win for Rude Boy Randy Brown. He improves to 19-5, a little 3-fight win streak for the welterweight now. And he did what he needed to. Outstruck Elizio 67-26 significantly, 89-42 in total strikes. Elizio did land 4 of 7 on takedowns, did land 4 takedowns on 7 attempts. 5.5 minutes of control time, but that came in round two. Rounds one and three were fought on the feet. Randy Brown outstruck him in round one, 34-9 significantly. In round three, outstruck him 25-14. So when it came down to the takedowns, they didn't do much for the scorecards. Rounds one and three went to Randy Brown. And Elizio Zaleski Santos gets his 8th career loss. Unfortunate, but I won't lie. This is Randy Brown's time. And he had an excellent call out of Jeff Neal, too, by the way. Jeff Neal currently ranked number 10 at men's welterweight, coming off of a loss. I mean, it just makes sense. Randy Brown, Jeff Neal, writes itself. Their styles are so similar. It just makes complete sense to me. Give me that fight. I was happy for Randy Brown. Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, you're 37. You turned 38 this year. It might be time to call it a career. That's what I'm just saying. That's what I'm saying. It might be time to call it a career. After that, we got to the fight, which replaced Halton Almeida versus Alexander Romanov. By the way, still the only finish of the night. And we get Nico Price and Alex Morono, and this fight sucked. This fight sucked. It was so boring. Alex Morono took it on short notice, and he won round one, by the way. Outstruck Nico Price 34-16 significantly. Did great. Landed a takedown, but that was it. That was it. After that, Alex Morono, of course, he took it on short notice. He looked gassed. He looked out of it. Got outstruck in round number two, 34-21 significantly, 50-30 for total strikes. Got worse in round three, 58 significant strikes to 41, 67 total strikes 41. Got taken down once, and Nico Price gets the unanimous decision. Nico Price getting his 16th career win, snapping a little two-fight losing streak. Good job. Good job for Nico Price, the 34-year-old. And that's Alex Morono, man. He's gotten win-loss since December of 2022. Sucks to see, but this just shows that, you know, sometimes the gas tanks give out on these guys. And it sucks. It sucks to see, but hey, I'm sure both these guys will be back. And Alex Morono versus, Cesar Almeida, but versus Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, versus Phil Rowe, Jake Matthews. I mean, there's a lot of options with these welterweights. Basile Hafez. I mean, there's a lot of unranked welterweights fighting on this card. I'm sure you can match make them all. But good win for Nico Price. He did what he needed to. Probably could have finished if he really poured it on, but Morono would just randomly start swinging, and Nico Price didn't want to jinx it. So there's that. We predicted it incorrectly, but it happens. After that, we got to the second best moment on tonight's card as Kevin Holland gets a 1:34 armbar of Michael Okojacek. I mean, come on. Kevin Holland, a legend. His 9th career submission, his 22nd career finish in now 26 wins. I mean, come on. Snapping a 2-fight losing streak. Both of those by decision. Dude's legit. I mean, this was his, what was his first UFC? This was his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th, 8th. This was his 9th career finish in the UFC. So very impressive stuff from Kevin Holland. Getting it done. Michael Okojacek now on a 2-fight losing streak. Been submitted in round one twice now in 2024. Okay, let's take a break, Michael Okojacek. Let me just tell you the story of this fight because I've barely been able to tell anyone the story of this fight. All these fights have been lame. But Michael Okojacek, Kevin Holland, they come out striking. Michael Okojacek, way more aggressive than MVP when they fought back in March, him and Kevin Holland. And he's swinging, and he clips Kevin Holland with a huge right. Kevin Holland doesn't really go down, but kind of just finds his way to the ground. I think he was backing up and slipped. Michael Okojacek goes into his guard, lands two big punches, but gets caught in armbar. And Kevin Holland looks at Michael, says tap, looks at the ref, says, I'm going to break his arm. And he freaking breaks or dislocates his arm, one or the other. And it's pretty comical. He gets out of the cage. He's shaking Donald Trump's hand. It was hilarious. I loved it. And it was funny. It was funny to see. Of course, yeah, Donald Trump was at this event on absolute fire. He made a TikTok, got 2 million followers in like a couple hours. All the fighters were going up and saying hi to him. The fans were cheering for him. It was great to see from number 45. And I mean, just hilarious stuff from Kevin Holland. Great win. This was at middleweight, but he made a call out of Neil Magny at welterweight. Magny's ranked number 12, Holland's ranked number 15. That's perfect. He even said he'll fight the winner of Vicente Luque and Nick Diaz. Kevin Holland's a smart man. He knows the purpose he serves as a gatekeeper. And I love it. And he's 31. Let me just tell you, Dustin Poirier was 35, getting his 3rd shot at a belt. Don't count out a title shot, Kevin Holland. String the wins together, and you can get there too. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we got to our co-main event for the number 1 ranked Sean Strickland took on the number 7 ranked Paulo Costa. And yeah, it happened. It happened. And let me just say, first off, a split decision. David Tyrrell back at it, gave 4-1 for Paulo Costa. I want you all to know, Paulo Costa at best won 1 round. There is a drastic argument for maybe 2, barely even out there. All 5 rounds probably went to Sean Strickland. He outstruck him every round. Let me just tell you that. I mean, putting it on. But, I mean, looking at the stats, actually, I mean, Paulo Costa landed more significant strikes in round 1 and 2, but he clearly lost both of those. Then round 3, Sean Strickland started landing more, round 4 more, round 5 more. I mean, just the pace of Sean Strickland. He just walked him down, Paulo Costa evaded, and made for a very boring 5 rounds. And Sean Strickland wins unanimous decision, 182 significant strikes, 158 Sanford total strikes, that's it. That's honestly it. It was the same thing every round. It was not action-packed. It was not entertaining. And that'll do it. That'll do it. Sean Strickland, you know, number one contender now. And, 4-1 in his last 5. His only loss is a split decision to Driscoll's Duplessis. He says he's going to wait for a title shot. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. He's 29-6. You're going to earn a title shot. Wait for your title shot. The only other option he would have, I mean, is the winner of Jared Cannonier and Nazarene Imavov. So there's that. I think the bigger question is, what does Paulo Costa do next? He was ranked number 7. I'm personally moving number 8 Nazarene Imavov past him to 7 since Nazarene fights this weekend. I think having a 4-7 next to their names would look better on the main event scene. But Paulo Costa could fight the loser of Cannonier and Imavov. He could fight Jack Hermanson. He could fight the loser of Hamza Chimaev and Robert Whittaker. He could fight Kyle Barallo, Michelle Pereira. I mean, just the options are unlimited for Paulo Costa. He did not look like a killer. He looked like he was just evading Sean Strickland every single round. But good win for Sean. Jumped right out of the cage. Took a selfie with Donald Trump. It's plastered all over the internet. Iconic. His pre- and post-fight interviews are better than his actual fighting. But don't worry. You know, it's Sean Strickland. You know, I think he gets kind of a bad rap. I remember his Abus Magomedov fight and the Driscoll's Duplessis fight. Those were both entertaining. You need 2 to tango, and Paulo Costa just did not fight the intense style that Sean Strickland wanted. He played it smart, and it didn't pay off. And with that, we get to the main event. The whole reason I watched this whole card. I saw 2 submissions. Those were the best moments of the night. First off, disrespect to Alton Almeida. He didn't get a 50K performance bonus. Kevin did. That was good. I'll tell you who got 100K on top of the money they were paid to fight. That is Islam Makhachev, who got a fight of the night bonus and a performance of the night for his round 5 Darshchuk. I mean, this fight was awesome, guys. This fight was awesome. This had everything you wanted, everything you could have asked for. I was here for it. I loved it. It was cinema. Islam Makhachev gets his 12th career submission, his 17th career finish, and he's now on a 14 fight win streak. 3rd straight title defense. He's your number one pound for pound fighter in the world. I don't care what Dana White says, saying John Jones is better. Islam still holding it down. Legendary. I love it. Round of applause for Islam Makhachev. And I mean, totals from the fight, Islam outstruck him. 88 significant strikes to 74. Total strikes 147 to 104 in favor of Islam. But here's the most amazing thing. So Islam landed 5 takedowns for 10 minutes, 23 seconds control time. That's impressive. Dustin Poirier defended 11 takedowns, 5 of 16 for Islam Makhachev. Poirier tried his best. In round one, Islam caught him right off the bat. Took him down, 4 minutes, 23 seconds. 10-8 in him round one. 10-8 in him round one. That was that. But then, round two, Islam went 1-4 on takedowns. Dustin was able to find his way back to his feet. Had more total strikes, 32-30. Was only out significantly struck, 26-24. And it was probably 1-1 or 2-1 if you scored round one, 10-8. But Dustin Poirier won round two on my scorecard. We go to round three. Makhachev was in his bag. Landed a takedown. Almost submitted him off the back. Outstruck him significantly, 18-15. There was that. We get to round four. Poirier has cut Islam open with an elbow, is making him bleed, outstrikes him 23-20, defends 5 takedowns. Dustin Poirier was in his bag in round four. And as we head to round five, it felt like it was anyone's fight. And the 2 minutes it lasted, 2.5 minutes, I should say, did not disappoint. These two were striking. Dustin was defending takedowns, but then Islam freaking does a little toe drag takedown. Poirier's neck is sadly wide open. He snitches in the Darce, and that was game over, and Islam retains the belt. A nasty Darce choke, and Usman Nurmagomedov, his cousin, basically his brother, jumps the cage to say, like, to tackle Islam and, like, celebrate with him, and security storms the cage. They're kicking all the Dagestani Russians out. It was pretty incredible, pretty funny, I should say, but Dustin Poirier, man, it hurt to see him lose, hurt to see him go out like that, but... an absolute legend, man. An absolute legend. I'll tell you, the legend of Islam Makhachev grows. That's now four straight post-fight bonuses. And, you know, he got two in this one, so that's now a $250K extra in his last four fights just from post-fight bonuses. I mean, he's finished every single opponent except Volkanovski in their first fight, the second fight he finished him. I mean, Makhachev's on the run of a lifetime. Poirier said he might retire. And I mean, you know, I'd love to see Poirier fight again, but if that truly was it, he went out like an absolute warrior, and I loved to see it. Poirier is ranked number four. You know, number five ranked Matheus Gamrot, I think, could pass him. I don't know if he's gonna. But Makhachev remains a champ. He's got a fight with number one ranked Armin Tsarukyan coming up later this year at UFC 308, I'm assuming, in Abu Dhabi. He was saying he wants to fight Leon Edwards for the welterweight belt. I love his ambition. That fight's not going to go down. I mean, even Islam said he'll fight whoever Dana White throws in front of him. I think he knows he has one more. If he beats Armin, there's legit no one, because, I mean, Matheus Gamrot doesn't have that much hype behind him at the moment. But, I mean, dang. Islam versus Armin's going to be a killer fight. And, I mean, we'll see what happens. But Islam Makhachev, 14-fight win streak, the third longest in company history. He solidified himself as, I think, better than Khabib. Might be. He's incredible. As for Dustin Poirier, I mean, you have fights. Volkanovski said he wants to fight him. You got a trilogy with Justin Gaethje. You could have him fight Max Holloway. You could have him fight Conor McGregor. You could have him fight Michael Chandler again. I don't care. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's not Dustin Poirier. I love you. You made me a fan. I was a fan before you fought. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that brings an end to UFC 302. And where do our rankings stand after UFC 302? Well, I have UFC 302 as the fourth best event. Not as good as 298, but better than 301 and 297 as far as the full card. As for the title fights, I mean, I'm putting this as the number three of the year. Better than, I think the featherweight and bantamweight fights were better. Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera, watching that live was insane. And seeing Ian Topuria knock out Volk was insane. But this fight, I mean, this is in fight of the year category without a doubt. And submission of the year too, without a doubt. I mean, the three submissions on this card could all be submissions of the year. Very impressive stuff. I had fun. And now we look forward to Louisville next weekend. So next episode, we'll be dropping our predictions for UFC Louisville, but we just give a big thank you to everyone supporting the podcast, dropping likes, giving me views. I mean, I appreciate it. If you ever want to come on, if anyone wants to chat, I'm always open for dialogue. I mean, I'm a podcaster. I gotta be. Thank you, Dustin Poirier, for really lighting a fire under me. You had me and Lexi, I mean, we were going crazy watching. We were going, oh my gosh, come on, come on, come on. And Islam got it done. Wasn't the storybook Cody Rhodes, Rocky Balboa ending. But man, he went out like a true American hero. So thank you, Dustin. And thank you to everyone again. I will make sure to catch you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.